Good afternoon. Thank you for joining Hashtag No Limits. I appreciate you all joining me today. Hashtag No Limits is a program in which I interview people that society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms into the butterfly. As if that's not difficult enough, then it has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. That is no easy task, but neither is busting through the limits that society places upon people. And not only do I interview those who have had limits placed upon them, but I interview those who help those bust through those limits. And so today, that's the kind of the person that we have with us, Michelle Vasquez. I've not met her in person, but I'm really hoping to in just a couple of weeks. No, you're not coming? Oh,
no.
Okay.
Oh, no.
All right. So Michelle is, for those of you who have watched me in the past, you know that I'm a master IEP coach. Michelle is also a master IEP coach, and that's how I've been introduced to her. But as far as getting to know her, we're going to do this together. So Michelle, thank you for joining me today, and tell everybody, myself included, a little bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Michelle Vasquez. I'm super excited to be here. And thank you so much, Shelly, for just giving me the opportunity to, you know, just be on here and share, you know, about myself and everything else. But just to let you know, I actually, yes, just like what Shelly said, I am a master IEP coach. I remember seeing her on there with the group coaching, and the community is amazing. And I have learned so much. Being in there, just going to the trainings, and Shelly is awesome and so knowledgeable. And I definitely
look
up to you, Shelly, for sure. I actually am currently I'm a resource specialist teacher. So I teach students with special needs or with an IEP in the general education classroom. So we do like a pull out and push in model right now. So we do half and half. I previously was a special education teacher in the special day class for 10 years. So that I will be starting my 14th year of teaching.
Wow. Kudos to you, especially some of those years being during the pandemic.
Exactly. Yes. Definitely a learning opportunity for sure. And I am a mother. I'm a wife to two active, very active little boys. They're 4 and 6 years old. And yeah, so I'm loving every minute of it, especially around this age. You know, it's like,
I bet.
Yeah. Like I know how to be with kids that are like kindergarten age and up, you know, was hard, but they're so much fun and definitely gives me a whole reason, you know, to do what I do and even more. So yeah. So that's me in a nutshell.
So you mentioned that you're a special education teacher. That's what brought me to the Master IEP Coach Mentorship. My child does not have any sort of disabilities that required an IEP. Do either of your children at this point have anything that requires an IEP?
No. My own children, Shelly?
Yes.
No, not at the moment. Yeah.
It's the reason I ask is because I started the mentorship several years ago, and it was pretty new. I think I was in maybe Catherine's third mentorship class. And at that time, there was myself and maybe two or three other teachers in the program. And then I was narrowed down to even more of those that were teachers also had children with a special need, and I didn't have that. And so I was quite an anomaly in the group. And so it's interesting to hear now that there are more and more special education teachers and gen ed teachers too, going into the mentorship, even without having their own children that they have the big interest in, like, you know, you and I have it in the special education world. So I'm glad to hear that there are more teachers going into it, because I think There's such diversity and such a need for everybody to have a better understanding of mm-hmm. the special education process and the possibilities. I felt like I had a great understanding being a former special education teacher, right. you know, like I'm sure you did too. But then when you get in there and Catherine really opens up to, you could do this and you can do this and you can do this because, you know, the law says this, but this is the minimum, you know? And so I have learned so much from her, even within the special education world, that I thought I wouldn't need coming from the special education world.
Exactly. Because we've been doing it for so long. We just, right. you know, we've been exposed to so much, but definitely getting into the program definitely opened my eyes. But actually, Shelly, I wanted to back that up too. The main reason why I don't actually have children with special needs, but I actually do have a foster sister that, yes, who has special needs. And yes, she's been with us for 26 years, which is, she is definitely the reason why I became a special education teacher. So yes. So we have to have some type of background, right? Why we even got in, you know, get into it, yeah. or have that story behind it. So.
Yeah. We all have that story. I had, Heather Cachapo on a few weeks ago, and she is kind of the same way. She had a friend who had a sibling that had special needs, and so she knew from little on, because of working with her friend's sibling, that, you know, she really wanted to go into this field. So yeah, I mean, we all have our own stories of what brought us into special education, but that's not really why we're here today. So So as I advertised, and as you and I chatted a little bit about what we were going to talk about today, you first mentioned that talking about the growing up around different people's cultures and backgrounds and how helpful that has been to you. So let's talk about that some first.
Yeah. If I can take it all the way back,
sure. So
if that's okay, I'll try not to ramble on too much, but to take it all the way back, I actually, I was born and raised in Hawaii, in a small town called Kalihi, and, definitely will always be home in my heart. Being born there is a huge, stirring pot of so many different cultures, right? Just being there, the school that I went to consistently persisted of people who were Filipino, like myself, okay. grew up in Hawaii, or were islanders, which consisted of Samoans, Tongans, Fijians, people of that just knew, and everybody just had the same culture. And so just growing up there, and that's all I really knew up until I was like about the sixth grade. Mm-hmm. My mom and my parents actually separated, and my mother brought my brother and myself to all the way from Hawaii all the way to Portland, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Completely opposite.
To snow and rain and all kinds of yucky weather year round.
Definitely. That's why I'm here in California now. I miss the sun. But yeah, so just growing up in Hawaii and then just knowing everybody's pretty much looked the same as me and not knowing any difference, I would have be exposed, you know, to people of other nationalities that we don't really see in my school every now and then, but not all the time. So going from that to Portland, Oregon, we moved. I remember the first day of my seventh grade year in middle school, I walked in as I was like the only other brown girl in the classroom with a room full of Caucasian people there, students and classmates. And with the exception of how I think there was one of my classmates was mixed. So she was half African-American, half white. And I remember as soon as I walked into that classroom, it was like all eyes on me. You know, who is this girl? She looks different, you know, and it was very scary. And I walked in. My teacher was amazing. I still think about her that day because I remember the first activities that she had that day. And not until I became a teacher, now I understood what she was doing, right? So she actually had an activity for the whole class, the map of the island I'm from, which is Oahu. She had a map on there, kind of like where, like locations and kind of like a crossword puzzle where we think. And I was just like, hey, I know this stuff. And It was awesome. Like, now I'm like, wow, I'm so glad she did that. I still remember that to this day.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, just to get the conversation going, having people, you know, get to know me and ask me questions, right? It was awesome. Yeah. But Shelley, I got to tell
you. I'm going to stop you there for just a second, because what a great example of including somebody. And yes. I mean, I suppose technically it was inclusion, but it's to me, really, it's just like, okay, this is what Michelle brings with her when she comes. It's different than what most of you are familiar with. And so let's educate you. Let's make her feel comfortable, because we're going to do something that she's familiar with. And at the same time, we're educating everybody else. And to do it in such a way that you as the student didn't even clue into it.
Correct. And
I sometimes think that's where teachers are worried that, oh, well, the student's going to still know that they're different because, you know, it's just going to be really obvious. And yes, you know, new kid in middle school, I'll be honest, if you're a new student in a district at middle school, all eyes are probably going to be on you anyway. Right. But to add to that, the fact that, as you said, you know, you're from a different background than everybody, your skin is a different color than most everybody in the room. And so, yeah, it was like, oh, okay. But what an awesome teacher. That's right? Just, I mean, kudos to that teacher, because that's what we need now for our kiddos with disability. What's not even just for our kiddos with disabilities, it's for everybody.
Correct. And I still remember her name, Shelley, Mrs. Howell.
Yeah. And that's the teachers that you remember, the really awesome ones and then the really not awesome ones.
Yeah. And then also she did her homework. You know, she knew I was coming. She knew my background. So just having just being prepared into knowing what to do right away was awesome. Just definitely as a teacher now, I really appreciate it. So
yeah,
it was awesome.
Sorry, so I interrupted, but that was just like, oh my gosh, that's such an awesome moment to talk about. And how, I mean, yeah, like you said, she did her some investigating and some, you know, preparation. It probably didn't take her as much time as many people would think, you know.
Correct.
Well, I don't know, maybe, I'm not sure how old you are, but maybe there wasn't Google and maybe she couldn't automatically just pull this stuff up. But I mean, you know, maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours, but how wonderful that 1 or 2 hours that she invested in you prior to you getting there was received, and how it helped set the tone for your future in that town and in that school district.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was great. So yeah, I really appreciate her. Very thankful for her. So yeah. So after that, my experience in middle school was actually very beneficial. Instead of people, I did have some questions, though, I have to tell you, Shelley, you know, just coming from Hawaii and people not knowing the background. But the questions that the kids were asking me were kind of like, wow, I'm so glad I'm here for you guys to learn. Because they would ask me, what kind of money do you guys use in Hawaii? Do you guys use shells?
Wow. Oh my goodness. But you know what? Again, it's a little frightening that by 7th grade they didn't know that. But at the same time, I'm glad they felt they could ask you.
Yes.
That speaks to that inclusion and inclusiveness that I sometimes think we're scared to let Gen Ed kids ask special ed students the questions because we're afraid it's going to offend them or hurt their feelings. But I think when you are open and honest and you honestly have a real honest question, then, I mean, things can just blossom and flourish. And they might have been, you know, like, really? This is a real question? I get that. But at the same time, it educated both of you, you know, in different ways, of course. But yeah.
Yeah. And it gave him the okay to, you know, that little activity gave him the okay to ask questions and everything like that. And throughout that whole year, I just remember people would just be very comfortable with asking me. And, you know, I'm still pretty friendly, but, you know, I was friendly and, you know, would answer their questions and everything. So, yeah, but my middle school experience was interesting. Of course, well, whose middle school experience is not?
Right.
But I was very lucky. They welcomed me with open arms, even though I was different, and which led me to be more, led me to be more open and more talkative. Because believe it or not, when I was in Hawaii, probably up until I was 12, I was extremely shy. Believe it or not, not talk that much. Now you can't stop me. So it really opened me up just because I had the opportunity to, I was somebody new and everybody was asking questions. So it was really good. And then after going into high school opened up even more, right? I saw people of different colors, just like me, even more being exposed to them. And I was just like, okay, this is, I'm getting a little bit more comfortable, you know? And I just, in high school, even though there was people of different colors there, as soon as you walk into the lunch area, everybody was still segregated, right? Like you would have, right, the Latinos on one side and then the Caucasian people, and you'd have African-Americans on this side. But what I loved, Shelly, is that my friends, we called it the multicultural table, somewhere in the middle. And it was, you know, kids of all the different colors. And my best friends, all of us are my best friends. I have, we still share the picture with each other today. You know, I'm Filipino. My friend is Chinese. My other friend is Caucasian. And my best friend is African-American. And that consisted of my group of my people that I always just hung out with. And, but also I did meet more people of the same culture as myself, but came from Philippines. And I actually was shunned away because I didn't know the language.
I've heard of stories like that.
So, and it was hard because people in Hawaii, they were more like me. They didn't really know the language because they've been, their ancestors have been in Hawaii for so long that, you know, technically the language does go away, right? Because you're so within the culture of Hawaii that's what I learned and grew up. So when I came to Portland and then, you know, meeting people that were the same ethnicity as me, I was just like taken back that they, didn't take me in, you know, as fully. So which is why it was great that I still had the multicultural table, that it wasn't just me. There's other people in my school that had that experience too. So,
that was my history. That is awesome. I mean, you definitely come from a much more diverse background than I do. I've grown up in the Midwest. I've stayed in the Midwest. It was only after I met and married my husband that I really ventured anywhere. And, you know, now I can list, you know, like 20 something countries that I've visited and, you know, lots of different states and things. But so what sort of things did you learn from having your multicultural table friends that you think are really helpful to you today in what you do in teaching and as being a master IEP coach?
That, Shelly. And then also in college, I actually majored in deaf studies for sign language. That's another thing too, that I forgot to mention. And because I was just so interested and so into the language that I love so much. And also being a part of a singing gospel group that, and just being immersed with all the types of music and everything, and that just being exposed to Earth, Wind, and Fire, and I have to name the show, and that, and then also finally being hired on as a special education teacher in a low socioeconomic Latino community, and being at my first school, which I call family, for 7 years. They were amazing, and just having friends with Latino background. And then I end up marrying a Mexican man, you know? And so that's a little bit more of like, even after high school, it still continued. And so how I feel just having all of this background and knowledge definitely has helped me as a teacher, for sure. Connecting with my parents, I think, has been the number one thing with that. With the schools that I've worked at, I've always had parents that only spoke Spanish only speaking parents.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I remember having, and I was doing it for 4 years already. If there's a will, there's a way, Shelley. You know, we will communicate. We will do what we need to do.
Right.
The end goal is their child and make sure that their child's successful. And I remember thinking about a certain story. I had a parent assuming that I was prejudiced against her because she didn't speak English.
Oh.
Yes. And actually went to my admin and complained about me. And I was just like, what? I was shocked. And at the time, my admin was very supportive. And I, you know, let her know. I was like, you know, that's not me. I've been doing this for, at the time, at least 4 years. And mm-hmm. I had many parents coming in and out. Shelly, by the end of that year, me and that parent ended up being like friends on social media, you know?
You know, I've heard a lot of stories that way too, you know, where you start off animosity and then, you know, once that confusion and assumptions all get just, you know, straightened out and that, yeah, it usually becomes a beautiful friendship in the end.
Definitely, definitely. And it's being a special day class teacher, and you know, Shelley, we have our kids for more than 2+ years, you right. know, and I had the student at least for 2 years, I think, but then she still remained in the school since she was with me since I think second grade. So we still had that connection. And yeah, so definitely just being open, being more empathetic towards parents that just came here or are they're uncomfortable with the English language. Making sure that, I think the number one thing is just making sure that they're also included with parent conferences, making sure that there's a interpreter there or trying to figure out all the announcements and everything is translated into their language, I think is so important. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that's something that gets overlooked frequently. Especially again, you know, as I said, where I'm from, most everybody here is Caucasian, and there are some other ethnicities, but I would say probably 90% or higher is Caucasian in my area. And so when someone does move in and they speak a different language, it's a little bit easier because it's just one language and it's usually Spanish. But in a bigger district where you have dozens of different languages, you know, especially with regards to the IEP, that is part of the law that it is supposed to have, you know, be in the native language or the language that's best understood as much as possible. And so, you know, I don't know that a lot of people are aware of that, and especially the people who need it. I don't think they are aware that that is a service that is provided to them if their child is receiving special education.
Yes. Agreed. And I think the most difficult part, Shelley, is the languages that are non-Spanish, because I had a student that was Chinese and I think his dad spoke Mandarin. And just to, you know, we had to go to the special ed department of our school district and make sure that, you know, we had an interpreter and everything. But that's difficult to even get, right? And I just, yeah. And you know, as much as we can. Good thing we have apps on our phone that can do translation, because that is how I survive with my parents. And, you know, these apps are amazing with every single language in the whole world just to speak to somebody. So that's how me and this parent communicated as well. So, yeah,
I had in my entire teaching career, I only had one student that the parent spoke anything other than English, and it was Spanish. And thankfully, there was a Spanish teacher, teacher who taught Spanish in my school district, but she really didn't, I mean, it was a junior high level Spanish class. So, you know, she really didn't do a lot of the communication. And so I did. I mean, this was before cell phones were super prevalent and we had all these apps, but I would Google Translate to try, you know, when I would write my notes back and forth, I would write it in English and then I would translate it so that if mom could maybe pick some of it out of the English, but wasn't quite sure, she could look at the Spanish or vice versa, you know, because some things don't always translate evenly, or exactly is maybe a better word. And yeah, so I can imagine that is very difficult, like I said, in the larger district with all the different potential languages that you could need to translate. And yeah, the announcements, the finding out all of that information has to be really, really tough. So I'm glad to hear that you found apps to overcome some of those limitations. What was your sort of percentages of different ethnicities that you worked with?
My first and third school, their percentages were pretty high with the Latino community. It was like 97%.
Okay.
It was great. Yes, yes. So a lot of Spanish speakers and then some African-Americans, and some African-Americans would be next, and then some Asian, but it was really rare. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that, or did that direct the needs? Like, were the needs very different, or were they very similar across all the ethnicities that you've worked with? Or like, what did you find the most interesting and the most difficult?
Yeah, that's a good question. Definitely getting Spanish translators were so much easier. Mm-hmm. And is easier currently. We also do have parents. I do have a parent that is deaf as well. And that isn't too difficult also. But definitely like something other than that, like we would have people from the Middle East and Asian. Those were more difficult to make sure that we get at least an interpreter. But the communication was definitely harder. And I just feel for those parents and just trying my best, you know, and trying to contact the special ed department, kind of like, okay, what do I do? You know, and I'm very happy. My current special ed department, they're very good with making sure that they get it done.
Yeah. Something that I've heard multiple times, and I've not experienced it because, as I said, I'm very boring in where I live as far as different ethnicities. Did you find that the people that you had in your classrooms truly should be there? Or what I've heard oftentimes is when there's a language difference, that because of our testing, a lot of people who speak something other than English end up in special education, even though they probably really shouldn't be there.
Yeah, Shelley, I've heard stories too. And I think I volunteered or just went to observe a classroom too. And they would tell me certain students were like, do not belong here. Another Spanish just came from another country that didn't belong there. My experience in my own classrooms, I haven't experienced that. Yeah, I haven't experienced that. Majority of the time it's like, no, they do belong with me in the special day class for sure. But yeah, I've heard of stories and it's just unfortunate. What I like about the testing that we do before having the student come into the special ed program is that I know with my speech and language pathologist, she makes sure that we have a Spanish translator there to do the speech and language testing in Spanish also to make sure that all of her grounds are covered. And I love that. I love that. And then same thing with our psychologists. I know they have that provided as well if they feel the need to. So,
yeah. So is it okay if I kind of shift gears a little bit?
Yes.
So tell us about your foster sister, because you said that she's one of the main reasons that you went into special education.
You're gonna make me cry, Shelly. Sorry.
Sorry, that was not my intention.
Yeah. She is. I can't believe I'm crying on live.
It's okay. It just shows how passionate and how much you love her.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. She came into our lives when I was 12. My mom opened up her own business of taking care of adults with special needs. And yes. So we've had two clients two clients, and one of them was my foster sister. And she has autism, multiple disabilities. She's nonverbal and Down syndrome. Yeah, she has Down syndrome. And so she was with us, I think, when she was early 20s. She's been with my mother for more than 20 years, 20 plus years. Yes. Her own biological mother is very much in the picture, and she comes to visit her as much as she can. You know, and with Leanne, my foster sister, she has, her behavior issues were pretty high back when she first came with us. So it was a learning experience for sure. My poor brother, when we were younger, he was only 8 at the time. She would chase him around the house. You know, he was scared. He was just scared because he was short at the time. Now he's like 6'2" and like, you know,
yeah. But,
you take on so much more empathy, I think, Shelley, growing up with somebody with special needs and, sorry.
It's okay. Yeah.
So,
take your time.
Yeah. Just growing up with somebody with special needs, and she has taught me so much, so much still to this day. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so tell me some of the things that she has taught you. And we got a comment from Janine. I'm guessing this is potentially somebody that you know.
Yeah, it's my cousin. Okay. So she knows. Yes, everybody knows who she is. And she is stuck to my mother like glue. That is my mother's baby. She like, sometimes me and my brother question, like, mommy, like her better than us.
That's okay. My daughter really used to say that about my students all the time. She's like, I am your child, not them.
Yes.
Like, because I would always refer to them as my kids.
Exactly. We still do that, right, Shelley? Right?
Yeah.
You have to. Yeah. The things that she's taught me, well, behavior-wise, she would chase us around the house. She would throw, you know, things towards us or towards family members. Objects become physical, you know, at times, a lot of the times actually. And we just learned how to cope and learned. And I think she just kind of knew. She knew that we're her brother and sister. And my mom is technically, you know, her foster mom. That's her mother. And she just learned that there were boundaries as she's gotten older, right? And now she's, I think, I want to say 48.
Okay.
Shelley. So she's been, we grew up with her. And it was awesome. And I wouldn't change it for the world. Yeah.
That's wonderful to hear. And to know that those, I think that could potentially give hope to a lot of people, just in the sense that she was already in her early 20s when you all came into her life. And that even though it could have seemed very depressing or lost cause or very, I'm not even really sure, I'm troubling with grasping the right words here, but to know that she is a successful grown up now, and that, you know, the right interventions, the right steps being taken. I don't, just a different approach to maybe a parenting style. I don't want to discount her biological mom at all and saying that, oh, the right people came in. I don't want to say that. But different people to come along and help support in that situation. And that hope of, okay, yeah, still in the early 20s, it was still pretty tough.
Right.
But now that she's, you know, 40-ish, almost 50-ish, she's so much different than she was. And things are much more manageable and much more under control. And sounds like she does have a much better sense of herself and everything that is going on around her and how to interact with those two issues.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, for sure. And even just growing up with her and just knowing, that I actually went into sign language because of her too, because that was one communication style that I know they used when she was in high school to see, you know, just to have her communicate with us. Cause that was, that still to this day is the hardest thing. I know my mother tells me all the time, it's hard to know, you know, if she's hurting or in pain. Cause, but definitely using a lot of visuals. And then she does know some signs, definitely. So that is definitely the most difficult thing is communication with her. So.
Yeah. And 20 plus years ago, when she first came into your family, there weren't really communication devices. And so sign language or the PECS system or some other sort of system like PECS, which is the picture exchange communication system. It's just a bunch of little symbols. And then you learn what the symbols mean. And then you use those symbols to express what you're trying to say. That was, you know, the only things really for communication at that time. So she is using a communication device now, or she still uses more sign language, or what is her main mode of communication now?
It's more of sign language, the gesturing. Mm-hmm. Does use the PECS system. When I was living with my mother at the time, she does use that. And there's pictures and visuals and symbols, you mm-hmm. know, that she would use to see what she really needs also, so.
Yeah, that's cool. So you have had a very diverse background, growing up with someone with special needs and then growing up with all the different ethnicities that you have been around, and yourself moving from Hawaii to the mainland and up to Oregon, which I'm sure was massive culture shock.
Definitely.
Yeah. Sure. So what were the benefits to you? I mean, we've kind of talked about them a little bit, but what were some other benefits, and even what were some of the negatives about growing up with all the different cultures and peoples and backgrounds?
The benefits for sure, you know, is being more empathetic to people of different cultures or that do not know the certain languages. You know, I've talked about that previously. I think I come, Shelley, I'm very fortunate that my family in itself, I have a really close-knit family with not just myself, but see my cousin on here. And we're a very close-knit family, extended family as well, where, and I think it's part of our Hawaiian culture, is that we accepted anybody that came to our home, and we would throw these big parties at my cousin's home, and we would just accept everybody. Oh, come on in. And, you know, like eat this food, you know, my auntie wouldn't take no for an answer. and it was great growing up and having people like to come over and be and it was my friends of different cultures coming in like, oh, we love coming to your house because, you know, you guys always feed us. And
that's always one way to make teenagers happy is feed them.
My friends knew that back in the day. So, it was great. And definitely just learning them, just welcoming into our culture, and then us vice versa, learning about theirs as well. And yeah, so that was definitely beneficial. And also bring it back to when I did go to college, it wasn't until I went to college, I was involved in a Filipino Americans student association back then. And I really found a huge love for my own culture. I was very involved. Nice. Yes. I was involved in a huge production every year. They would, it's called the Filipino Cultural Night. And I was very involved with, they made us learn the cultural dances and be part of the skits and everything like that, how it was like in the Philippines. And it was then where I really embraced myself being a Filipino. So not just only learning about other cultures, right, Shelley, but learning about your own and where you came from, right, to really get that appreciation. So it wasn't until then that I really, I really had a true love for my culture. So learning about yourself, being empathetic was great, is I think the benefits. And yeah, just growing up with all these different people and backgrounds.
Right.
And then definitely the negative side to it was when I would come across people, like I said earlier, you know, of my own culture that didn't like that I didn't know the language. And I know I'm not the only one in my own culture, but people of other cultures, I know they feel that way as well, you know, being quote unquote American born, yeah. Right? And not knowing the language, and how come you don't know the language? And I still get questioned to this day about it.
Yeah.
You know, but I still don't make other people feel that they're indifferent just because, you know, they don't know a certain language.
Right.
So that was always, has always been my purpose, to try to make sure not to have people feel excluded, you know, try to make sure everybody's included in that. So that kind of is a negative part of being around other cultures, is just the them just not being educated enough as well, to not knowing other people's cultures also, and just the them assuming this is how your, you know, group of people is like and everything. I think just being closed-minded, so.
Yeah, Kobe and Clan says, yes, you're on point. We must appreciate our own ethnicity to appreciate others, because we can emphasize the love and respect of culture and traditions. And yeah, that is definitely a downfall, again, to the area that I'm in. There are a lot of people who, because they haven't experienced other people, other cultures, even other parts of the country, you know, it's not intentional, but their mind is just very, well, this is how it is. Well, yeah, that's how it is right here. But then there's all of the rest of the world, or the United States, that, you know, we need to consider. And I think that happens, you know, no matter where you are. It doesn't just happen here in the Midwest. I mean, there's, you know, there's people on the coast that have no idea what those of us in the Midwest deal with and go through and are like, and we don't have a lot of idea of what it's like on the coasts. And, you know, so being able to have that exchange and that open communication, and to be welcoming and be okay being uncomfortable asking some questions, and being uncomfortable being asked some questions, again, like I said before, that are honest, you know, that we just want to have that exchange of information, and not be stupid with our questions, and not be accusatory with our questions, but just to be really like, I'm sorry, but I don't know, you know, this or that about your culture. You know, can you help me understand it? Or like you said, for yourself, I don't know this about my own culture. And I think that is a ton of limits that we could all bust through on a very regular basis, is just getting to truly know our neighbors, and not just, oh, that's, you know, that's Michelle that lives across the street. But like, hey, Michelle, you know, your skin is a little different than mine, or you speak a little bit differently than I do, or you seem to have a little bit different traditions than I do. You know, let's talk about that. Let's, you know, be open and welcoming. I think our world would be an incredibly better place if we did that more frequently and honestly. So let's move into teaching a little bit. So all of these experiences that you have, like, have you found yourself, and you may not know the answer to this, doing things to include people from other ethnicities, or all the ethnicities that are represented in your classroom, that maybe you don't see others doing? Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I know a lot of the lessons, like, I bring into my groups, I try to make sure that it's like current events. Like, for instance, when there's Martin Luther King Day is coming by, or maybe the month of February highlights, you know, African Americans. And I try to make sure I bring in articles that we are reading, right, about the history of African Americans and everything like that. Or May is Asian Pacific Islander month. I make sure to include that as well, even though majority of the kids in my school are Latinos, you know, mm-hmm. just exposing them to be like, hey, you know, there's other people that you may not right. know about. And even I had, I have a student that just, it's a struggle to get him to start his work, right? And when he's with me. And what I did was I thought about, okay, what is something that he likes? And I know he loves soccer. So I was able to find a passage about soccer and actually had a lot of the same experiences as him. Cool. Yeah, growing up. And he saw that connection while we were reading it. He was like, hey, that's just like me. You know, so just, yeah. And this, the person in the article was from Argentina, you know, when the student, you know, his family's from Mexico. So that, just to have that connection is just kind of like, hey, you know, we're experiencing the same things, even though we're not coming from the same place.
Right.
Yeah. So definitely including those, you know, in your lessons. And that definitely is something I try to make sure I include. I have a wonderful teacher, gave me a great idea of every month she would do read alouds of that culture that was representing that month. Yes, and I think that's a great idea that I want to make sure I start implementing also. So,
yeah. So we had chatted a little bit, again, you know, kind of in preparation for today about what you and I were going to talk about. And so now that we're on to the teaching part of it, what was your experience getting into special education?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so definitely, I think being young and I loved doing read alouds with my brother, and I still do that to this day with my kids. And
that's
a
good skill. I mean, that's one of the best ways for little ones, especially to learn, but at any age.
Definitely. Whenever I have the opportunity or chance, I kind of slip that in. Read alouds with the students. They loved it. Like after lunch, you know, we would do a read aloud, and just to get the kids, get a love of learning, right? Or love of reading, and that there are books out there that they can connect with. But going back to that, you know, I just love doing read alouds with my younger brother, and it kind of, it would make him laugh, the voices like that I would make. And it just gave me more of a love, like, hey, like I like this, you know, I think that kind of sparked it first. And later on, being able to help other people. I volunteered when I was in high school, volunteered to teach in a sixth grade classroom. And then there's so many different things. And then also having my foster sister, and then not really sure, okay, do I want to do general ed or do I want to do special ed? That has always been on my mind. And then when I finally got into college here and I was doing the deaf studies program, and I kind of shifted to have the emphasis in special ed with my major, I got a position working in an elementary school, upper grade, fifth grade classroom. And I was under the most greatest teacher to this day. I learned from the best. I definitely am still learning, but she has taught me so much of how to even be like in the classroom. She wouldn't take no for an answer, as in, like, she would ask me, okay, what do you want the kids to call you? And I was like, oh no, it's okay, you know, they can just call me like Miss M or something, or Miss S. And then she was just like, no, the kids will learn your name. They will learn how to say it. And my maiden name, my maiden name is Sagusho, and it is nothing, it's not how it's spelled at all. So and such a huge tongue twister, but no, the kids learned how to say it. And she made sure of that. You know, if the kids can say Tyrannosaurus Rex, Shelley.
They can learn
how to say certain things. So I definitely took that with me up until today. You know, I made sure that they learned how to pronounce certain things. But the experience of doing that, working in a gen ed classroom, for a few years, and then the need for special ed was high at that time, back in 2006 or so, and it still is. But at that time, I knew, I was like, something about special ed, I want to see if it's something that I really do want to get into, you know. So I actually was employed with a fantastic outside agency of being a one-on-one behavior therapist.
Nice.
Yeah, with an outside agency, and had the best training. It was really good, and learning so much in that realm. And I had students, I was a one-on-one with students with cerebral palsy who are physically disabled in a wheelchair to autism. And then one being fully included, and she had Down syndrome, you know, and I had fun. it was great and learning experience. That was my door that opened to not just special education, but yeah, just being in the education field with students with special needs. Cause all my experience before was, you know, the adult, you know, them being adults and community based learning and stuff like that back then growing up, but being in the school system and elementary kids, definitely that was the door open for that opened for me. So after that volunteering and I got into my school district's intern program. Very, very fortunate to get into that. And having the experience I had, I was able to be hired on at my first school, which is down in the LA area. And it was great. It was a good learning experience. But I remember my very first day, Shelley, my principal, you know, took me to my room and it's just like, okay, here you go. You know, here you go. And I was like, oh my God, everything kind of sank in right there. Right.
Right.
Like, oh my gosh, like I am responsible for these babies. You know, and it was a position in kinder through second grade, you know, mild, moderate, special day class. And it's just like, okay, here you go. And I'm like, and the training we had, Shelley, was a 6-week orientation for that intern program. And it was, here you go. I was terrified.
Oh my goodness.
I was terrified. Yeah. And like all that experience I had just went out the door, you know, it was gone. I'm so fortunate from doing all those positions that I made relationships with teachers and paraprofessionals that was in the game for a long time that helped me with resources and everything to get my program going. And even the team that I worked with, the Gen Ed team that I was there with and still friends with today, just took my hand and just helped me out with resources and materials also. But it was scary, difficult. And I feel so bad for that first group that I had. they already graduated high school now, Shelley. So crazy.
Well, it's crazy. Time.
Yeah.
And so I'm guessing when you walked into that first classroom, so your background today is very clean and very non-decorated. And then there's my background. So I'm going to guess that your first classroom, when you first walked in there, was more like your background is today, where there wasn't anything on the walls, where there wasn't, you know, this beautiful setup of classroom. But within a few days, yours was more like my background, where there was stuff on the walls. There was, you know, you were finding those resources. You were doing all the stuff. But I think sometimes we do a disservice to our new teachers. And if I am remembering correctly, this is the group of people that you are really working with as far as helping them, those new teachers in special education, is kind of understanding all of that stuff. Like when you walk in, there's not going to be a lot for you to use. You're going to have to go find, you're going to have to spend money. You're going to have to do this and this and this. Am I correct in that?
Exactly. Hit it on the nose, Shelley. And exactly. You said, even you just saying, you know, we have to spend money, right? I remember, I don't know if you saw the meme where it says there's a picture of the government. And then the teacher funded classroom.
Yeah.
You know, and some of my family members asked me, like, you don't get compensated for any of this stuff, do we, Shelley?
Most places do not. Now, there are some places, you know, that they give you maybe a stipend. I think the most I ever received in a stipend was $200. And that was gone in like the first purchase.
Exactly.
And then, you know, the rest of the year and the rest of the decorations. And even today, like I haven't been in the classroom for 5 years. And so I still have a lot of my stuff because I'm like, well, what if I go back in the classroom? I don't want to have to repurchase all this stuff. So I've held on to it, but I'm like, I really need to get rid of this because I'm probably not going to go into the classroom. But yeah, it's just like the amount of money that I spent over my teaching career, I'm having a hard time just donating that all now because it's like, oh my gosh, that was like probably two or three paychecks, if not, you know, more over the course of my career.
Yes. That's probably why I still have stuff too. That makes sense. Oh, I can't. Yeah, that's true. It's true.
Yeah. So tell us, we have about 5 or 6 minutes before we're going to have to wrap up. So tell us about stepping into SPED.
Yes. Yes. I'm starting a new podcast, hopefully launching July 25th. And it is called Stepping Into Special Education. And so what it is I'll be helping new special education teachers thrive through self-growth, the internal work, and then also professionally as well, classroom, the quick classroom organization that's functional, you know, mm-hmm. doesn't have to be pretty, but something that's right. functional, something that they can do quick right away. And then also having the community building, which is having the relationships with, yeah. that's what we do in the Master IEP Coach, you know, making sure that everybody feels included in the IEP table. But just having relationships, how to work well with your paraprofessional, how to gain relationships with your students, the parents, and then also communicating with the outside services, right? Which is like the school psychologist or the speech and language. There are so many adults involved, right?
Yes.
We do. Yes. And coordinating all of that, but then just also just making sure that that you have that good relationship with everybody and everybody, especially your paraprofessionals. I remember I had up to 4 in my room one time with a class of only 10 students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, how do you manage it all?
Exactly. You know? When you're not really their boss, but you kind of are.
Right. And so that's who I would love to work with, even more new special education teachers that just don't know where to start, don't know where to go, not really sure how to work with, you know, the paraprofessionals or parents. That is what I'm hoping with this podcast and helping them just getting those quick wins to set up their classroom. Having interviews with school psychologists and other fellow teachers, even parents, bringing parents in to let special education teachers know the everyday life that, you know, we are blessed with these babies for what, 6-7 hours at a time, but they go home to parents, you know, for the rest of their lives. You know, yep. we're only with them for a fraction of the time. So yep. sometimes we forget about that, right? That and we forget of how difficult it can be for the parents. So definitely bringing on parents is definitely one of my main things I want to do as well. Just having their background story and letting educators know, you know, what it's like. So that is my hopes for this podcast. And definitely you're an inspiration too, Shelley.
Oh, thank you. Well, and to your point, I mean, I had some students, that I had for, gosh, 7, 8, 9, and 10 years. I had 4 different students that I had in for those amount of years. And then the rest of my students, like you said, I had for 2 to 4 years, depending, because I had in the building where I taught the longest, K-8 of the most severe in that school district, and then K-4 of just the kiddos who just needed the extra little bit of outside help from their general education classroom. So my ones that I had that were the most severe, I had one student for 10 years, the day I walked into that district until the day I walked out of that district. And she walked in and walked out the same time I did. So, so because of that experience, I thought I had a pretty good idea of what it was like. And then I wrote my book and I did my interviews of these families, and I was blown away at how much more there is to their lives and how much more I appreciate their lives now than I even did before. And so I'm forever grateful to the families that let me write about them in Those Who Can't Teach, because it does. It shows a completely different aspect and perspective to teachers that we don't have. And it's, I think, very vital that we understand that. Because like you said, we just have them for a few hours a day. We don't have them all summer. Oftentimes they go to a different teacher the next year, certainly in general education, sometimes even in special education, that happens too. And so it is important for us to know what's going on at home. How can we cooperate and collaborate so that we can make things at home very similar to what's happening at school?
Yes. Yes. That is number one. Because yeah, Shelly, just having, we want the child to be structured a certain way, you know, here. Thank you, Karina.
and good. You have support today.
Yes, I do.
Always.
Yes. And it's so difficult, right, Shelly, to have the same structure of how, what we're doing here at school and then what we're doing at home. That's probably like the most difficult. And I think for myself, for sure, because of the background of the parents that I have, you know, a lot of them, they're working 2+ jobs sometimes. Yeah. You know, it is so difficult for them. And then we've got language barriers too, you know, so there's definitely so many limitations to that. But whatever we can do, you know, provide like schedules, visual schedules, at least try to have a conversation with a parent, you know, so you know, okay, what is the structure at home? So you can at least create that for the child at school, and then they can go and they can go ahead and just take that home. I did that a lot during pandemic time when, you know, just having that connection and that follow through, which was difficult for parents at home, but they were great. Yeah.
Yeah. And wait, that's another thing I think we have to remember. You know, we're burdened as teachers, most definitely. But parents are burdened too. And it's, you know, we've asked for the burden that we have because we went to school. We wanted to be a teacher. We got that degree. We went out and found the job. And that's where we are because we've chosen to be there. But most parents haven't chosen to have a child with a disability. You know, there are those situations where someone has adopted somebody or, you know, a foster situation, whatever, but the majority of parents have not asked for the situation that they're in. And mm-hmm. So we need to remember that, you know, that they have a lot of insight. B, they have their own struggles. They have their own burdens, and we need to be respectful both ways that, you know, the teachers have burdens and we're trying to figure things out, and the parents have burdens. And, you know, and if we can work together and say, okay, how can we walk this out together and not be defensive when the other one has an idea that is different than ours, mm-hmm. and say, okay, I don't really agree with that idea, but tell me more about it. And maybe, you know, maybe I can understand why you're asking for that. Or maybe I can understand what you're saying when you're saying this, that I didn't get it just by the words that you said, hey, let's do this. Because again, I think, and I know I said this earlier, but it's so important to have that open communication and that collaboration with a special needs son with ASD, love the inside and background at school. So we, as parents, can be on the same page for support for our kids all around. Because yeah, what is, you know, and this was something that I didn't emphasize as much before getting into the Master IEP Coach Mentorship, but what is the purpose of special education? The purpose of an IEP is to prepare a child for further education, employment, and independent living. So in order to do all of those things, there's a lot we need to do or can be doing that maybe we haven't been doing to this point. And I don't mean every single special ed teacher out there, or every single gen ed teacher out there, but you know, I think they are the exceptions. Right. Rather than the rule.
Yes, exactly, Shelly. And you just talking about, you know, making sure that pretty much everybody's on the same page, right? And how my cousin Jane did say, you know, my nephew does have autism. And I know she, just like you said, we chose this, you know, and a lot of our parents, they didn't. And so we're assuming, we've been to so many meetings and so many IEPs, you know, that this is, I don't want to say the norm, but we get kind of jaded, right? Because we've been doing this for so long that right. We forget that our parents, this is their first time they actually had to sit in an IEP meeting. They don't right. know what to expect. Do they right. even know their rights? You know?
Right. Exactly.
And it's, we forget about that. So I try to make sure that we communicate with the parents and kind of give them a heads up. Okay, this is what we're talking about. And, you know, the things that we learn at Master IEP Coach to help support the parent, I think is so important to making sure that parent input statement is there, right? Mm-hmm. It's such a big deal. And what was I going to say? Oh, Also, I was going to take it back to making sure that parents don't get so defensive, because I know I've had parents that didn't have a good experience with the schools that they've had in the past. So they kind of bring that with them right to this new school when they come to me.
Right.
And so I try to make sure when I do meet with them the first time, or when we do have those parent conferences or like back to school night, I try to make sure and emphasize that, just letting you know that, you know, just as long as all of us support each other, we communicate as much as we can, moms, dads, grandpa, grandma, you know, guardians, foster parents, just as long as we communicate with each other, at the end of the day, it's the child that we are supporting. And for with me doing this for now going to be 14 years, that is when I see the child become successful.
Yes.
Right? When everybody is on the same page, whether the child likes it or not, they know they can't get away with stuff at home and at school.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Right? I have seen them skyrocket. And it's so beautiful to see, because we've had them for so long. We have them for how many years?
Yeah.
But that huge growth is great. So yeah.
Yeah. And definitely when it comes to, and we've gone over a little bit, so I'm going to wrap up here, I promise. But definitely when it comes to behaviors, unwanted behaviors, if you can get everybody on the same page, exactly what you said, you know, it's not quite the same with academics. It does work, but when it has to do with behaviors, most definitely, when they know, okay, no matter where I go, the same standards are going to be applied and the same levels of discipline are going to be applied. It can change so much so quickly. That was the love that I eventually fell into, was the behavior side of things, because of experiences that I had. But, yeah, definitely. When you can be collaborative, and when you can remember, you know, everybody's going through a tough time, kind of is the base of, you know, whether you're the parent, whether you're the teacher, and certainly if you're the student, you know, no student asks or wants to be a person who's struggling in school. And I think
exactly. That's
something we really, really forget the most often, is that here's this child just trying to be like everybody else. And for whatever reason, it's not working out that way for them. And I asked the question in my Facebook group recently, who's the most important person in the special in the IEP writing process? And most of my answers were correct, in my opinion. My opinion is it's the student.
Yes.
Because why else are we there? We wouldn't be writing an IEP if it wasn't for the student. Mm-hmm. So we have to remember, you know, put our pride aside. It's not about what I want. It's not about what the parent wants. It's not about what the school wants or what's easiest for all the adults. It's all about the kid that the IEP is being written towards. So
that's, exactly.
So final words, Michelle, I really need to let you go. So
yeah, no, I love it. I love it. This is good. just wrapping it all up, try to immerse yourself in different cultures, even just, you know, learn something new or read a book or do a read aloud with your children of a different culture, you know, just speaking to both parents and teachers, actually, you know, doing that, just getting everybody exposed, I think is so important. Just learning about other cultures is so important. And with the special education part, you know, my podcast will be launching July 25th. So hopefully, definitely the support would be great. And just trying to figure it all out. Shelly, you need to give me pointers. I'll be calling you. So.
Oh, absolutely. I'll do what I can. I'm eventually wanting to put this out as a podcast too. My daughter's supposed to be helping me with all of that, because I'm too old to get all the tech, but she's a recent college graduate, so she understands all of that stuff. But how can people find you? Like, how can these new teachers, do you have a website that you work one-on-one with them, or is it just mostly going to be through Stepping Into Special Education podcast?
Yeah, for right now, you can connect with me on Instagram, Stepping Into Special Ed. And I also have a Facebook business page as well. So definitely that would be the first step to connect with me. And then also you can contact me at steppingintospecialed@gmail.com.
Okay. Perfect. And I will try to put all of those things in the comment section so that people can use those and access those. Michelle, it's been so wonderful to get to know you today. Thank you. I'm disappointed that I don't get to meet you in person in a few weeks, but I understand how that all goes. And for everybody else, next week is July 4th week, and I am on vacation, so there will not be a hashtag No Limits. But when I come back on July 12th, I will have the autism dad, also known as Rob Gorski. He will be joining me. So you want to tune in for that. So thanks, everybody. Have a great week and happy Independence Day.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.